Recording is on.
Oh. Okay, link to the agenda is available right here in chat. And we'll go ahead and get started. So the highlight of today, we have Lisa Levasseur presenting the work of the MeToB Alliance. And overall structure will do IP note, call notes, scribe selection, and be thinking about if you want to volunteer to scribe, introductions and reintroductions, announcements and reminders, progress on action items. Then we'll get to our featured speaker and follow that with community feedback and discussion. Okay, IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. I'm including in chat the link if you need to join the group. Before you join the account, you'll need a W3 web account. And that's free, just a W3C registration. And you can do that at this location that I pasted into chat. Lastly, to view the text of the community contributor license agreement, that is available at this location. Call notes. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived in the CCG GitHub meetings repo. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. And the discussion in IRC is mirrored in the Jitsi chat. All attendees should type present plus, that's the word present, symbol plus, no space in between, to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. In IRC, type Q plus, that's the letter Q, symbol plus, no space, to add yourself to the queue, with an optional reminder, for example, Q plus, to mention something. If you're not on IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. You can type Q plus into chat, but say if you're on voice only, you can ask to be put on the queue. Please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always Q plus again. And this meeting is held by voice, not by IRC. Off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. Scribe selection. Do we have any volunteers to scribe today?
This is Manu. I can do it.
Oh, thank you, Manu. Let me update the scribe list to make sure you're... Okay, let's move to introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone new to the call that would like to introduce themselves? Okay, I'm not seeing any aliases that I don't recognize. So let's move on to reintroductions. Okay, Dan Burnett, who I do not see, Christopher Allen, no. Marcus Sabadello, not seeing. Let me just scan past a few. Is Ganesh here? No. Dimitri, we got all the way to you. Do you want to reintroduce yourself?
I am here. I'm not sure how good my connection is.
It sounds good to me.
Okay, so hi everybody. I'm Dimitri, software engineer with Digital Bazaar, active in VC, did confidential storage specs, and contributing to a lot of the related JavaScript libraries. That's it.
Thanks, Dimitri. As always, great to have you in the community.
Thank you.
Announcements and reminders. I'll paste the link into that. Oh, sorry. Wayne, you're up.
Oh, yeah. After the general announcements, I wanted to give a few more, but I can do it now if you'd like.
Actually, I'll go ahead and read those out. So, actually, I will go ahead and share my screen. Okay, upcoming events. Reminder that, well, this is the last meeting in the year. So no CCG meeting the next couple of weeks. Our recurring meetings, so every Tuesday, in general, we have this call. This still needs to be updated. I'll update it. We have the verifiable credentials for education task force. We're now meeting every Monday at 8 a.m. Pacific, and see more details at our meeting page. Did resolution calls also on Monday weekly. Those are 1 p.m. Pacific. And confidential storage calls, which are co-hosted with the Decentralized Identity Foundation. And those are Thursdays, 1 to 2 p.m., et cetera. And Wayne, you're up.
Yep, just two announcements. The first is more of a call for objections to the infrastructure task force. This is something I'm going to be trying to move forward on our chair meeting this week. Basically, there are a number of work items dependent on this group existing, such as for NPM package management and reducing the burden on chairs. So if you have an objection or a thought, you want to express your support, there's a GitHub issue open, and I'll paste the link where you can express that publicly. And then my second announcement is starting in January, I believe January 5th is the first meeting of the new year. I personally have a conflict and I can't make the time anymore. So the decision was that we should see if there's interest in a separate meeting time. I'll be sending out a survey to the community to figure out people's availability in general and maybe a few suggested slots at that. We can shift it a day. We can move it an hour forward, which is not too friendly to folks in the EU. There are a few directions we could go. You know, if you have feedback, I will start a thread and feel free to respond to that. That's it. Thanks.
Okay, and one other announcement I should, a reminder I should make sure people are remembering is that we do have an upcoming chair election. So if that's something that you might be interested in, feel free to reach out to the current chairs who can tell you what's involved with that. And Heather's been working on a chair sort of job description, which will help give you some idea of what's required to make the sausage. So just reach out to us if you have any, if you want to discuss. And on that note, it looks like Heather and Wayne have curated a set of action items that we'll look through now. And let me share my screen as we go through those. Okay, these actually look like the same ones that we discussed last week, but it looks like there are remaining issues. So let's go ahead and do these and try to close these out. VC PRs under maintenance charter. We talked about this last week. Let's see. So the last status is that we need to communicate our process to W3C staff and come to alignment. There's involved parties. It's not clear where this issue needs to live now. Does anyone want to speak to this?
Yeah, Kim, I can. So Raina and
Manu's first.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, sorry. It still needs to live in the CCG. I don't think there's really any place that's better for it. I believe we need to have a call. Like, we need to get the editors and the chairs and the staff contact together and hammer out all the details. I don't feel like we're making good progress on the issue. There are too many, like, unknown details that are kind of floating out there. So I think it's just after the holidays, we should convene a meeting between at least the leadership in the communities and figure out, like, really nail the process down so that W3C staff is happy with the process that we have. That's okay.
Thank you. I will actually remove the review next. Well, actually, let me keep that so as a reminder for us to follow up on that. And Heather, you're up next.
Yeah, just thought I'd give you guys an update because Wayne and I had a really productive call last week where we got into some of the infrastructure task force stuff, including discussing some of my concerns, primarily my main concern with the scope. We did sit down and do a high-level audit of all the systems. And so the next step in that is to, based on our audit, which included current activities and desired for potential future things we might do, which includes the VC the VCPR maintenance stuff. So the next step then is to I gave Wayne a task to do to identify the items in that audit to be in the scope of this infrastructure task force. And, I think Wayne and I are going to talk later today or this week about, you know, really getting very specific about the scope of what the infrastructure task force will cover, which will address a lot of my concerns and issues that I brought up last week. So that's kind of like the update on, like, I think part of the conversation is where this goes, the 170 goes. For whether it goes in the infrastructure task force or somewhere else or whatever. So, we're making forward progress on this one and the infrastructure task force one, too. So that's an update on both of those.
Fantastic. And so that addresses one and two. What about number three? Is that still an outstanding objection to this proposal?
Do we want to get into this? I mean, W3C infrastructure, as Wayne pointed out last week, has a strong objection model, which I actually think is a masculine bias in the W3C infrastructure, and I'm not going to fight that battle in this group. I'm going to fight that battle in the diversity inclusion group, which actually the diversity inclusion group is closing and getting moved into the positive work environment. So
great. So I'm going to just make a note just so we can move this forward. So it looks like number three.
Hey, Kim, sorry to interrupt you. Why don't you let me address that note? I would prefer to address that directly in the, please do not make comments on number three in that PR. I will make an update on that.
Okay, that's great. And then we just need to make sure that you know anything in this issue is sort of accounted for. So great.
I mean, just to be clear, I'm not 100% behind the infrastructure task force. Still, I am working with Wayne to address all my concerns that we had. So I'm not like full speed ahead on a separate task force. I am full speed ahead on addressing all of the things we need to do in the task force.
I'm just going to make a note that you're going to update it with the latest status so we can move to proposing. And I think Wayne mentioned that you're going to send it, Wayne, you're going to send out a call for objections. Is that right?
Yep.
Great. And then lastly, formal call for objections. Then that means, so this one has been in the proposed status for a while. So after you do that, we have like a you know, week interval. So after that, we'll say 1 week interval for objections. So if you can do that, like, you know, basically as soon as possible, then in the new year, we should be able to move forward with it.
Okay. I'll send it out today. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Excellent. So I'm also going to keep this labeled reviewed next so that we can close on this. Okay, and it sounds like this one, I think there are two issues. There's, is it going to happen? Is it part of the infrastructure task force? So
yeah, I can speak to that.
Yeah.
Yep. If infrastructure task force is accepted as the task force, then it would host the NPM maintenance and governance.
Okay. This one isn't proposed as a separate work item, so I don't think we need to call out objections for it. It's just sort of clarifying that it's in scope. I think that there is interest in doing it. It's just, maybe calling out the expectations around it. And so, yeah, it sounds like if we decide to do that, the task force will take that on.
Yep. And just, adding, if I may, from last week, test suites and, you know, reference data, those are the initial low risk, low stakes kinds of things that we'd like to see there instead of anything that's part of a production build chain or something like that.
Fantastic. Yeah. Okay, great. So, okay. I think I'm happy. It looks like we're moving these forward. Let me check the queue real fast to see if we have anyone else. Okay, that's great. So we're making good time. We can move on to the highlight, which is Lisa Levasseur in presenting the work of the Me2B Alliance.
Thanks, Kim. Sorry, I was trying to open and unmute at the same time, which it did not seem to like. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And are you seeing my screen?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you. Thank you to Heather and Kim and Wayne for the invitation to come and speak with you all. And good morning. So what I wanted to share today is a little bit of the thinking that we've been doing and the work that we've been doing in the Me2B Alliance and where, in particular, draw a connection between the work that's going on in this group. And so what I'm going to go through today is really one of the key things we've learned in the couple of years we've been at this is that we don't really have the right vocabulary to adequately describe with specificity what's going on, with our Me2B relationships in the digital world. And so most of this presentation is going to be sharing about this proposed language and terminology that we've come up with. So when I put together this deck, and this deck is really a subset of slides, there's a deck that I did at IIW in October, and that's available on the Me2B website. That's at me2ba.org. And if you're interested in a deeper dive on all of this stuff, I've kind of pulled out a lot of that for the time constraint today. But one thing I wanted to keep in the front of my mind as I built out this deck was the mission of this community group. And I've been actually stalking this list for a long time, at least a couple of years, and I'm not very active in it, but I do kind of poke my head in every now and again. And so this was sort of a note to self and just reminding myself of the mission of this particular working group. And so what we're going to cover today is I'm going to give you a little brief update on who we are, what we're doing, and most importantly, our ethical foundation. And then I want to dig into vocabulary, in particular, me-to-be relationships in the digital world, and then the me-to-be relationship life cycle, what we call me-to-be commitments and me-to-be deals. And then finally wrap up with a little bit of an exploration around me-to-be and credentials, how it relates to credentials, and just a couple of questions and things that I think you might be able to clarify for me. So the Me2B Alliance, we were founded a couple of years ago, and our overarching ethos is that respectful technology is better for both me's and bees. We are deliberately a finger on the scale of the side of the me's in the me-to-b relationship because of the current power asymmetry between the two. But we firmly believe that building respectful technology is not only a win for me's, but also will benefit bees. And bees are businesses, in case that wasn't clear. Our mission, and we're just doing some final wordsmithing on this, so this language is a little bit clunky as we continue to refine it. But this is our current sort of working version of our mission. It's growing the availability of respectful technology choices through measurement and awareness for a safe and just digital world. And my background really is kind of a long background in telecom standards, mobile telecom standards. And I have seen in this long time that markets are created sometimes through standards. And I thought many years ago, actually, I had this idea of like, well, what if we created a different kind of standard that wasn't just bits and bytes and protocols, but was actually had some considerations of sort of ethical and behavioral considerations in it. And all we need to do is create such a standard and perform certification. And that will drive consumer awareness, which will drive demand, which will result ultimately in market choices. And I know that this is idealized, and I hope you caught the little tongue-in-cheekness in this, and it's not at all easy either. But this is really the kind of founding vision behind it. We used to describe ourselves as like the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval or the organic food label, but this year, it kind of came to me like an epiphany. That's not at all what we're about. We're really much more like an independent crash testing institute. You know, instead of cars, we're testing connected technology because we are looking for potential harms and risks for people. And one of the key things that we developed last year, and it's sort of a living repository, is a digital harms dictionary that we're continuing to build out and modify over time. But this focus on harms, and when we think about vocabulary, this is another place where, from a legal point of view, we don't have the vocabulary to articulate properly all the different kinds of harms and risks people are experiencing online. And we spent a good deal of time contemplating kind of, you know, what is our ethical North Star? We're, you know, in some sense, we're trying to come up with almost a universal ethic, which is, you know, a fool's errand, perhaps. But we do have an ethical North Star. And what our ethical North Star is looking at the attributes and behaviors of healthy human relationships. So if we consider, you know, our relationship with technology to be that, to be a relationship, well then, shouldn't it behave in the way that we ascribe to healthy human relationships? It's really kind of that simple, you know, kind of our ethical bedrock. And what we've done is we've taken attributes and behaviors of healthy human healthy human relationships, and we've adapted them a little bit into this, what we call the me-to-be rules of engagement. And these are really kind of the root principles that every single one of our tests in our testing rubric can be traced back to one of these things. And I'm not going to read through all of these. These are a little bit motherhood and apple pie, but I do want to call out a couple things here. First of all, you haven't heard me say data or privacy yet, and that's deliberate. we think those words are too narrow a focus for the scope of what we're doing. And so really what you'll see here, for example, is respective boundaries. Well, privacy is one such boundary. Another thing I want to call out from this list is respectful defaults. So this is really the precursor to the relationship state in a way. So in a sense, maybe it doesn't deserve to belong here, but it's really crucial, especially for technology. And, so this principle here, this rule is in the absence of stated preferences, we default to the most conservative behavior. This is a social norm. In fact, all of these are, you know, come out of social norms. And we do this in life. Like when we meet someone for the first time, we often do not divulge our, you know, financial, religious, political, you know, we withhold things. We behave more conservatively in our, really holistically, much more conservatively, not just in disclosure. So this is a crucial piece, especially when we think about applying these rules of engagement to products and services. Because right now, products and services are not obeying a rule of respectful defaults. And that's a pretty big problem. We have this thing we're calling the Me Manifesto. We used to call these our principles, but really this is a sort of Me Manifesto. And again, we're, you know, pardon our dust. We're wordsmithing this a bit. So it's not quite perfect, but, it's pretty good. And so, and again, these fundamental principles have been around for a couple of years and they're holding up as we continue to do our testing. And, I should say something about our testing. We are doing what we're calling early certification. We spent a lot of time building out our testing rubric. It took a very long time to get to our baseline MVP table stakes, testing, criteria. And we have been doing what we call early certification with friendlies, since about mid-year this year. And that has been hugely illuminating. And we expect to spend several more months doing this early certification with a sort of proper commercial launch of the testing next year. So this Me Manifesto, are sort of our three key principles here. You know, we assert our rights. And, you know, no holding, having, collecting, storing, using, computing, deriving, whatever it is, a profiling without a me to be marriage. Well, what's that? I'll explain that in a minute. Another fundamental principle is I'm in charge. And importantly, I'm in charge of the me to be commitments that I make with products and services. And that also requires a little bit more explanation of what a me to be commitment is. And then we play nice. We agree to play nice according to the rules of commitment because it's better for us both. Unless you think that this is very individualistic, the phrase me to be, you know, comes across very individualistic. Our ethos is not. Our ethos is very, sort of embodied in the ethos as a recognition of interdependence and, you know, sort of that well-being is, interrelated web. And healthy societies need respectful relationships at all levels, including a planetary level. I write this, you know, sort of just as a note to self, but I don't expect that we'll do things like sustainability testing on technology, but we think other people will. And we think that's important for the holistic idea of, you know, well-being. So just a little note on that. Okay, so digging in to the vocabulary. I want to start with me-to-be relationships in the digital world. So what is a me-to-be relationship in the digital world? We look at this as the deliberate relationship that we have with a business as experienced through multiple touch points. And the touch points have changed in the digital world. They've really amplified and changed in several key ways. In the larger deck of this presentation, I have more specific slides comparing and contrasting the me-to-B relationship in the physical world versus the digital world. So if you want to dig into that, you can take a look at that deck. So I'm just kind of cutting to the chase a bit here. So these multiple touch points that form this relationship, some are directly with the business, interaction directly with the business. In the digital world, that often presents as the legal agreement that we have to make, and we'll talk much more about that. It also presents in customer care and the interaction that we have with the business. Another big part of this relationship that we have, it's actually with the connected products and services themselves. And, you know, the first thing I want to say about these connected products and services is that they're sort of brand ambassadors. They're sort of, you know, almost living in a way. They're connected. They're smart. They're available 24/7. There's a humanesque characteristic to connected products and services. And so, when we're interacting with them, we're kind of building up this valence, you know, like of like and dislike, love, hate, whatever, but it's really coloring our idea about the brand and in many cases, the business itself. And that's a little bit squirrely today, because people are confused, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But in general, this me to be relationship is complicated and it's layered. It's layered like an onion. So let's look at this. So this is Alice, and she has just unboxed her iPhone. And the very first thing that she's going to do is set up a me-to-be legal relationship with Apple Inc. It's really literally the first thing you're forced to do in these situations. That is a legal relationship. It's a contract. And then she's using her phone, and she starts to build what we're calling a me-to-P or me-to-product experiential relationship with the iPhone. I should make a note here that all of this language that I'm proposing here is, it's work in progress. We know it's not perfect. So I want to just caveat that. Okay, getting back to the me-to-P. So it's this experiential relationship. This is the thing of, you know, she's using this thing. She's interacting with it quite a lot. And she starts to have this valence, this idea of, you know, how she feels about this thing. At the same time, there are what we call B2B hidden affiliates, third-party integrations and software suppliers. In a sense, Alice is having a relationship with these, what I call hidden party guests as well. You know, these are getting more exposed with some of the GDPR disclosures happening, but in general, they're pretty unknown. Okay, so Alice is using the phone, and the next thing she's going to do is she's going to go to the App Store and she's going to download an app. And she decides she wants to download, for whatever reason, she wants to download the Chrome browser. And, of course, the first thing that's going to happen here is she's going to set up a legal relationship with Google Inc. It's the very first thing that happens. And then she's going to start to use the browser, and she has, first and foremost in her awareness is an experiential relationship with the Chrome browser. Note what's happened to the phone. We're proposing some new language here called Me2T, Me2Technology, and the phone has really become a kind of technology enabler. It's there, it's crucial, but it's not in the forefront of her awareness. She's interacting with this brand ambassador from Google, the Chrome browser. So also what's happening in this time frame as she continues to use the Chrome browser is the hidden party guests grow. And so now she's got the hidden affiliates, third-party integrations and software suppliers from Google and the browser, the Chrome browser. And so she's using the browser and she's going to navigate over to Instagram. And she decides she's going to create an Instagram account. So of course, the first thing that happens is she creates a legal relationship with, well, who? Exactly. Who's the B? And so here's the login site. And this is not an unusual design pattern, but, you know, down here in the lower left in gray, it's Instagram from Facebook. That's the B. And Instagram is a pretty well-known one. But in research that we've done, for instance, a lot of people have no idea that WhatsApp is part of Facebook. So the lines are blurry on these me-to-B relationships. It's confusing. It's very confusing. So she's using Instagram, and this is a little bit of a contrived example. I hope you'll, suspend disbelief on this, but she's using the Instagram website. She has an experiential relationship with the website. And at the same time, she's subjected to the hidden affiliates that are included. And again, this is a stack. It's a growing cumulative stack of sort of hidden affiliates. You've got from the native device monitoring, from the Chrome browser monitoring to whatever app you're on. So this just keeps stacking up. So these relationships, and as we think about it in the Me2B Alliance, you know, trying to test and clarify scope of our testing and whatnot, we needed some language. We needed some way to describe the landscape of this. And so this is what we've come up with. And so when we say like Me2B relationships, the Me2B covers all of those layered relationships, even when they're Me2T or Me2P. So it's really covering all of the relationships and touch points, because all of those touch points need to be respectful in our way of thinking. Okay, so moving on into the Me2B relationship lifecycle, Me2B commitments, and the Me2B deal. So we've taken this minor adaptation from human relationship lifecycle. This is a George Levinger model of human relationships, and we're adapting it for use for the Me2B relationship. And you'll see here that I've got marriage here. In his model, it's really A, B, C, D, E, and this is termination is end, and this is commitment here. But since we're using commitment in a very specific way, I've changed this to marriage for our use. And so the Me2B relationship lifecycle model applies for Me2B relationships in the physical world, as well as Me2B relationships in the digital world. And I'm kind of skipping over the physical world so that we can have time to talk on more about this at the end and focusing on the digital world. And so I think we can all individually understand our processes and understanding of these different stages of a Me2B relationship, you know, how we get into the state of being very committed and using a service or product on a regular basis and through to deterioration or termination. And just as a reminder, this, you know, no relationship is ever clean and no model is perfect. And we recognize that. This is really just a tool for us to think about applying the social norms to the digital Me2B commitments. And in reality, you know, that little chart, the previous chart, looks in practice with our interpersonal relationships as well as Me2B relationships, it looks more like an EKG, right? There's fits and starts and, you know, we break up and then we get back together. And, you know, so it's not clean. But again, this is a tool for understanding and helping us get more specific in our testing and scoping how we're going to test and measure the behavior of technology. So within this digital Me2B relationship lifecycle, there are multiple Me2B commitments. What are those? They're a spectrum of specific transactions and agreements that we make in the digital world. And this can kind of be understood also as states. It's kind of states. It's not perfectly states. Some of these are more statish than others. So for instance, this no commitment first open. So when we do our testing, for example, the expectations of what happens to the individual when they first go to a website, no cookies, first time ever been there, very first open of a website or very first open of an app, we're measuring that behavior. We're measuring what's going on to make sure that there's nothing sort of sneaky going on in there. So this is the no commitment. So this is the starting point. And then there's cookie consent commitment. We sometimes refer to this as in our work, consented pseudonymous commitment. There's also something that happens for a location consent commitment. There's a couple of different ways that appears to people. We have promotional communication commitment, where we agree to sign up for promotional communications. We have a loyalty program commitment, where we agree to sign up for a loyalty program. We also have a one-off transaction, which is a rather ephemeral commitment. We just want to do one thing and essentially go on our way. and have no strings attached. And then finally, we have what we call this me-to-be marriage. I do want to underscore a lot of people in our work don't love this term, don't love this phrase. So it's a working phrase. It happens to be really quite effective as a metaphor and very appropriate. So we're going to continue to use it and see if it stands up or not. And a critical thing in our testing, we test a lot of things. We're testing things like data minimization in each of these particular commitments. We're also testing whether or not the individual has agency to enroll and unenroll, to, you know, opt in and opt out of all of these different commitments, that there's no sort of strings attached in these commitments. So the digital me-to-be marriage begins when the individual establishes an account. That's the ceremony. And so it's right here in this process. I like it. You know, I've played with it. We've dated, however you want to play with this metaphor. And so I create an account, and that is the marriage. And this, I'm not sure if I have this in this deck, but this, the hallmark of this is signaling to the bee that I want to be remembered, recognized, and responded to. This is pulling from Joe Andrews' functional identity, right? Which I'm a huge fan of, you know, being remembered, recognized, and responded to. This is a signal that, yes, I want to be remembered, recognized, and personally responded to. And then at the end of it, you know, I delete my account, and hopefully this is the end of the marriage. This is the divorce. And at this point, I, you know, in me-to-be world, I am forgotten. So this is a kind of idealized mapping of these, at least the two main states of being in a marriage and not being in a marriage. So this here is the purple star is the, you know, I've signed up for the account, and when I'm logged in and I'm transacting whilst logged in, I am in the me-to-be marriage. When I am not logged in and maybe don't even have an account, there is no me-to-be marriage, and I haven't a reasonable expectation to be anonymous. We'll talk about this anonymous word in a minute. But from a human perspective, you know, we're drawing on things like how your life is when you window shop in stores in the real world. If you walked into a small store for the first time and you did not know the person behind the counter and they called you by name, it would be creepy. That would not be your expectation. You do not have an expectation to be recognized and responded to. You have an expectation of anonymity. So that's what these darker gray states are, is that when you're not behaving and you're not logged in and maybe you've never signed up for the account, you have this expectation of anonymity. Again, this is idealized. The other commitments that we make can also be mapped on this arc of the overall me-to-be relationship. So I might sign up for promotional communications at some point. Yeah, you know, I'm starting to go there. I want to get some coupons or whatever. The accepting cookies, actually, if this is describing a browser or a website, and we're testing websites and apps right now. Those are the two things to start off with. And so when you're navigating through websites, this accepting cookies comes obviously very early, very early. And that is a commitment. But it's complicated, and that idealized picture doesn't really reflect what's actually happening. And so, oops, this was supposed to be animated. I animated the wrong thing. Okay, apologies. A little last minute modifying of this. So there is this consented pseudonymous state. Sorry, I can't stand this. I got to move it. I'm going to move it. And you are sort of temporarily remembered, recognized, and responded to, but in theory, you're not identified. and I'm doing scare quotes around identified, because you actually are identified, and I want to talk a little bit more about that at the end of this presentation. But this is also, there's back and forth, this data, there's a huge like data channel here, right? In this consented pseudonymous state. And I didn't even really know this existed, this terminology. I was not very familiar with it until recently. I'm sort of embarrassed to say, but there's this language of the data layer. And for me, this is sort of like this noxious, like in cartoons, they display bad smells and it's like sort of a transparent green filmy color. This is like that transparent green noxious data flow that's happening completely under the radar of the individual. And so our idealized version of this is not at all clear. And in fact, this picture isn't even right, because as soon as you consent to cookies and there are, you know, in some cases, universal IDs tracking you, that can happen throughout the whole span of this, even on top of what's happening overtly, you know, sort of the information sharing that's happening overtly in the context of the me-to-be marriage. There's the invisible layer. Probably need to update this slide to reflect that. So the last word or phrase I want to introduce to you is this idea of a me-to-be deal. So for every single one of those commitments, you know, this site wants to use your location. Will you let it? These are the cookies that we want. Will you let us? For every single kind of commitment that I listed earlier, there is a me-to-be deal. And there is this sort of question that we're faced with. What am I going to give and what am I going to get? Do I want to do it? From a me-to-be perspective, there is an inherent fair value given for fair value received measurement. And in our testing, we're looking at data minimization and we're looking for sort of like flagrant imbalances of information collection proportional to the type of service or the website or, you know, the contextual situation for the tests that we're running. And every one of those me-to-be commitments has a personal sort of what I call quid pro quo calculus. We do this ourselves. It's personal. And we answer questions like, do I trust this business with this information? Am I comfortable sharing this information? Do I think it's a fair exchange? There is this sort of, you know, and it might not even be conscious, but there is this kind of calculus that we do. So that's the sort of speed course on the language. And then I wanted to go back to this mission of the credentials and just kind of highlight where I think the synergies really are here. And it really has to do with this idea of I'm in charge. And in fact, we have a version of this slide where there's a sort of me to be design fiction reality that we would like in each one of these stages. You know, like I'm anonymous until I say otherwise. I can transact without being forced into a commitment. I decide when to start the me to be relationship. And here it is. I can bring my own ID and privacy terms and permissions. So this goes beyond sort of bring your own identity, which I like to use, for everyday me's, as a way to try to explain this to everyday people. But also we care about bringing your own privacy terms and permissions and preferences. And that's why, for instance, I'm working hard in the IEEE 7012 group on machine readable privacy terms, personal privacy terms. So I think this is really kind of where the most, synergy lives, but I have some questions. And it was, I kind of struggled with the wording of this, so forgive me, I don't have it quite right, but, you know, I'm interested in credentials in the context of me-to-be marriage and credentials versus identifiers and really kind of thinking about credentials versus the user identifiers that are created by first and third parties throughout the relationship, right? This goes into the pseudonymous cookie consent state. And even before that, frankly, even before that, in some sites, their third party user identifiers are being created. And so, you know, thinking about it for first parties, these internal identifiers are used for the ongoing data collection, correlation, and personalization. This is, you know, I've opted in the me-to-be marriage to be remembered, recognized, and personally responded to. So that service, you know, needs to be able to construct those personal responses. And then also the third party universal cross-platform IDs, which are a real problem. And we're, you know, our testing is actually spending a lot of time learning and exposing these things. But these are a fundamental construct of ad tech and martech. You know, they are a fact. They're just a fact. And so I just wanted to end by saying, you know, I wonder how much you guys have thought about this stuff. I imagine quite a lot. And I apologize that I'm not up to date on all of your discussions and everything. But I just wanted to leave with this kind of question about, well, what about this stuff? How does this fit into, you know, user-controlled credentials and a whole scheme of that? So that's really what I had.
Thank you, Lisa. That was a fantastic presentation. And I wanted to encourage people to add themselves to the queue if they wanted to speak to the questions on Lisa's last slide. In the meantime, we do have other people on the queue, and I think we start with Adrian Gropper.
So thanks, Lisa. I spend about half my time in the standards and technology space and half of it in the advocacy and governance space. And in the context of the CCG and why you're welcome for this presentation here, I would say that separation of concerns, which is something that we in DIFF W3C have the power to specify in terms of interoperability, teaches, for example, that controllers should be separate from processors and regulators should be separate from certifiers. But to answer your question directly, one of the ways to think about what we're doing in terms of the standards, SSI type standards, VCs, DIVs, is that requests are different from authorizations. So in other words, a controller in the GDPR or whatever sense you want of a delegate or a proxy or a fiduciary of the individual gets requests, but the service providers only get authorizations. And I'll just leave. I don't want to take too much time, but that is something that I think regulators and certifiers can build on. And I put some links in the chat for people who want to look into API neutrality and other things that are going on around the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian. Manu is on the queue next.
Yeah. Thanks, Lisa. This is all really fantastic stuff and very much aligned with the kind of things that this group is concerned with and thinking deeply about and all that kind of stuff. And I'm looking at, you know, we have 4 minutes left in the call. This is mostly an urge, you know, an urging for you to just, engage more with the community. I think there are a lot of, you asked some really great questions at the end, and I don't think we can answer them in the short amount of time that we have, but we are absolutely grappling with those questions. In fact, a lot of the slide deck that you put forward is very aligned, I think, with current thinking in the group. But there's no one that is, you know, really, focused, you know, on it. We tend to focus a bit too much on the technology side and not enough on, you know, the certification, testing, understanding what these relationships are and creating languages to express it, you know, in the market. So all that to say, the questions that you're asking about identity and identifiers versus credentials, there are a lot of different kind of angles on that. But what we have tried to do, as Adrian mentioned, is separate these things to the biggest degree possible, so that we could understand each one, at greater depth and then compose them together in appropriate ways. So it's kind of, you know, ripping the thing apart into its atomic components and then building new molecules that are fit for purpose from those, you know, components. So I think the language that you are using and have generated can really help this community. And what I wouldn't want to see is for you to present and then go off somewhere else and us not have that bridge set up. So it's just a general plea to figure out some way to get the work that you just presented, more directly integrated with the work that we're doing, because I do think that it can do a lot of good, in this group. That's it.
Thank you. Can I respond?
Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you both for that feedback. I will dig into the separation because I it's still squirrely to me because, you know, we're still seeing the identification happening sort of under the radar screen. And so, but I would also say that we are open for business. We're in a membership. Our membership is open and we have a very sort of low bar for membership. We're kind of in a soft launch, where the platform we're using has some bugs on it, but, we're working through those, but we are open. And if you want to join, please, I would encourage you to please join, and just follow along, like the certification working group, perhaps. That would be, and I know a lot of you in the call today and some, we have some people who are, paying attention to the Me2Be Alliance, and I really would love to figure out ways to continue to keep this connection very fresh and very alive.
Thank you, Lisa. And yes, I agree. I think there are increasing opportunities as well. For example, through the DHS Wallet Design Challenge, which is sort of more product focused than we usually are, sort of user interaction flow. I think that the testing and certification, both the process and specifics of how you implement that would be very interesting to explore in the context of the wallets. So there's no one else on the queue. I wanted to thank Lisa again for that great discussion and the topics that it brings up. Looking forward to continuing collaboration with you.
Thank you so much, Kim. I'm really grateful to you all for allowing me this time. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Wanted to thank our scribe Manu for his scribing.
Yes. Good job, Manu.